terrorism expert Dr. Waleed Fares on the program, and we had more questions for him, not only about Afghanistan, but we wanted to talk about his new book. It's a book I had heard about from Lee, someone who works here at the station. It's called The Coming Revolution. We're going to get into that after a couple questions about Afghanistan. Dr. Waleed Fares is on the other end of our McLaren Health Plan phone line. Dr. Fares, how are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me today.
Well, thanks for coming back. And we were talking about Afghanistan, how their president had made comments that it would back Pakistan if the United States were to attack Pakistan. And obviously, we have some concerns, as Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was trying to get Pakistan to be a little bit more effective in its crackdown on militants. So to hear the Afghan president saying this, after all we've invested there, must have come as a shock.
It does. This is not just a silly statement. It's reckless. It is irresponsible in the middle of an alliance between U.S., NATO, Afghan forces for about a decade almost. To make such a statement is not something that one would expect from the president of an ally nation. But you contrast that with so many speeches Mr. Karzai, President Karzai himself delivered, both in his parliament when he came to Washington, you know, for a decade, about this wonderful alliance that helped this country get rid of the Taliban. And then you just wonder, if he delivered 100 speeches that are pro-alliance and pro-American, and then this one sentence to the Pakistani media, what does that mean? It means, in my sense, that he is testing the waters. He's trying to see if the Pakistanis would react favorably. I don't think he means that he's going to stand with Pakistan against the United States, but he feels that we are already negotiating with the Haqqani network, with the, you know, part of the Taliban. And he thinks that when we will withdraw from Afghanistan, he will find himself certainly under the fire of the Taliban, and they will, you know, get rid of his regime. So this is kind of a building a bridge with the Pakistanis. That was wrong to do, but that also indicates that we, by our statements that we are engaging the Taliban, are sending, you know, signals right and left, and you would expect other politicians to do the same in the future.
Let's talk about your new book, The Coming Revolution, Struggle for Freedom in the Middle East. I know it must be fascinating over the last decade just to see what's unfolded.
Well, absolutely. This book is the result of years, maybe a couple of decades of observation, monitoring, analysis of the real social forces deep inside civil societies in the Middle East and the Arab world in general terms. And after the, you know, two major events in battlefields after 9/11, that would be Afghanistan and Iraq, I observed how the region's peoples are moving. Number one, we had a revolution in Lebanon, 2005, the Cedars Revolution, 1.5 million people on the streets of Beirut. That was enormous. That was the largest demonstration ever in the Middle East before the Egyptian Revolution. Then we had the Green Revolution in Iran, in Tehran, 2009, another 1.5 million people on the streets of a capital ruled with an iron fist by the Ayatollah regime. Those two, and internet and globalization, facilitated the circulation of ideas. And that's how basically I projected last year, the book was published last year, that there is a revolution coming to the Middle East. But that revolution is not only the events that we saw till now. What we saw till now is the first chapter of this revolution. It will be basically the fall of authoritarian leaders. We saw already in Egypt, Mubarak going down, in Tunisia, Ben Ali, in Libya, just last week, Gaddafi. Now we're going to see unfolding similar stories in Yemen, in Syria, and beyond. And then the second chapter is a race between the Islamist organized groups and civil society secular groups, which we are already seeing in Tunisia and in Egypt. So the coming revolution is still coming. It's going to be there in the region for another half a decade at least.
How do you evaluate the revolt in Libya?
Well, Libya started as a series of demonstrations, as everywhere in the Arab world, or at least in North Africa, suppressed, you know, violently by Gaddafi. It armed itself. It got the support of NATO. And then it rose as an armed resistance movement. It wasn't anymore, a democratic or a movement with non-violent means, because they were suppressed with violence. But meanwhile, that revolt over the past 6-7 months was slowly but surely controlled by or dominated by the Islamist militias, which on last Sunday, everybody in the world was surprised why would Mr. Abdel Jalil, the head of the Transitional National Council, declare that Libya will become an Islamist state. I was not surprised because for months and months I've been warning that meanwhile the militias are taking over and the secular bureaucratic and civil society element was receding, and that's how that revolt, which started civil society, ended up in the hands of the Islamist movement today.
We're talking with Dr. Waleed Fares, the author of The Coming Revolution, Struggle for Freedom in the Middle East. He's a Fox News Middle East expert. He's also been an advisor for, and still is, for many members in the U.S. Congress. When we think about the Middle East, you know, part of that, of what's going on over there, are the election results in Tunisia.
Absolutely. That is also in the same direction of energies as all North Africa. We're going to also see it in Egypt in a few weeks from now. In Tunisia, the secular element is stronger than in Libya and maybe stronger than in Egypt because they had traditions of social movements, labor unions, and even a little bit of the left over there in Tunisia. But the Nahda Islamist movement is also strong, and it was suppressed for many decades. And when you say suppressed, you're talking about an underground movement. And one additional point for the listeners to understand, the Islamists in the Middle East are all connected, meaning they support each other when they are in exile, when one is strong in one country, they support the other one, while the seculars are disconnected. Each secular force is only within the confine of their borders. So the result in Tunisia, which was somewhat expected, was that the Nahda Islamist Party got about 30% of the vote, meaning this is the largest party now in the new Legislative Assembly. They would be forming the government. They would need, though, another or two other political parties to obtain more than 50%. But the government will be definitely influenced by them.
Aren't these radicalists, aren't they tired of the fight? Aren't they tired of killing? Aren't they tired of living this way?
You know, that's a universal question. It's a question of the elites leading those movements. So it's not really the regular people. The regular people, they rise, and then they go down and go back to their daily lives. Those who seize power are the ones who are either inciting for more confrontation or calling for people to stop the fight because they're enjoying what they got. See, the Middle East today is going through what Latin America went through, you know, in past decades. It's a fight by elites to get to power to replace other elites. So you have authoritarian leaders going out, Ben Ali in Tunisia, and there's a fight between the elites that got him out to replace him. And in this case, the Islamists will, you know, will win now in the next few months. But there will be an opposition against them by the seculars later on. And that's the cycle of the, you know, political process. And until they reach a point where they're going to be a democratic system that would organize that, so a change of elite is not, you know, won't be dramatic and won't be violent and won't be stressful as it is right now.
From your perspective, what does Islam say about Israel?
Well, Islam as a whole was was born way 12 centuries before Israel. So theologically speaking, I will defer to those who can, you know, who can look at theological text and find something. I would only look at the Islamist agenda, political agenda, not at Islam as a religion. That's a different theological debate. The Islamist movement, the ones who that rose from the 1920s, such as the Muslim Brotherhood or the Salafists or the Wahhabis, or in Iran as of 1979, the Islamic Khomeinist Revolution, they actually do not recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel. That's clear. That, you know, doesn't have room for interpretation. Now, would they accept a coexistence with a state of Israel somewhere on the historical lands of Palestine? We haven't seen any indication that those movements. Now, they accept ceasefire. They accept accommodation. They would say we're going to, for 10 years, not engage in a war. But ideologically, the Islamists, not Islam, the Islamist movement do not recognize the state of Israel.
Well, it just, you know, I come back, and I know this is a probably a social issue that will take generations to clear up, but the fundamental foundation of most religion is peace, contentment, serving, having a happy life. And there's this constant struggle, this constant fight, this constant disarray. And I wonder, when are the people going to tire?
Yeah, well, that's not a universal question. In my academic research and work for over three decades now, so it's outside the geopolitical analysis that I conduct in terms of terrorism or conflict, I have observed historically, and I have yet to write about it, that it's not really ideas or ideologies or theologies that are in charge of, because these are books on shelves. These are written, you know, paragraphs. It's really people. It's really elites who would use a religion, an ideology, or a set of beliefs, or, you know, a nationalist view to basically come to power or to shape the future of a nation, of a group, of a religion. So it's really more on the political economy of elites who really want to find a space for themselves and interest for themselves. It may be very vague what I'm saying, but I don't think that ideas are forcing people to do things. People create those ideas, and people follow their interests.
All right, I've got about 40 seconds left. Iran wants to rule the Middle East.
Iran wants to become the new Soviet Union of the Middle East. They want to, first of all, do the bomb, make the bomb, control Iraq after we withdraw, link up with the Syrian regime, control Lebanon with the help of Hezbollah. If they can push towards Eastern Arabia and have an enclave in Gaza, that will make them into a superpower in the region.
Is that going to happen?
Well, about 70% of this has happened. What has stopped them basically from doing this was our presence in Iraq, and we are going to be leaving by the end of the year. So the Iranians are ready for the last chapter of the grand power design that they have in the region.
We've been talking with Fox News correspondent Dr. Waleed Fares. His book is called The Coming Revolution. Dr. Fares, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.